Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Yomi. Zvachim Kofiut Ches. We begin 10 lines off the top of the Amud back to Bama. What happens in a Bama Gedoila, in a central Bama? So it's not a formal official Mishkan. It was a central Mizbeach, such as what they had in Gilgal, Noiv Givon. So during those times, what can the Tzibur bring? What type of Karbanos can they bring to the Bama? According to the prevailing opinions of yesterday, basically anything. According to Rav Shimon, however, just as a Yachid, a private person, is limited in his ability in terms of what he can bring, Tzibur as well. Amar, so we learned yesterday, Rav Shimon Omer, that the only obligatory karbanos choiva, right, choivos, that even a tzibur can bring in a bama gedola, are those that are time related, kavod and zman. For instance, you have the daily tamid, etc. But otherwise, if you have other obligatory karbanos, such as a parhelim davar shal tzibur, which the tzibur brings when they sin, etc., although they are karbanos choiva, karbanos tzibur, but they may not be brought in at a bama, because they're not time sensitive. They're not related to time. My time with Rav Shimon, where is Rav Shimon's source for this distinction? The Chassid, we have a pasuk describing the event at Gilgal. So when they entered Eretz Yisrael, the first 14 years, the Mizbeach was in Gilgal. And it says, the Chassid, Vayas, Bnei Yisrael, Es HaPesach, Ba Gilgal. Okay, so Klal Yisrael brought their Korban Pesach and Gilgal. Now, obviously, I mean, why would they not? It's time for the Pesach. Why would they bring? What was the major event here? That's being described in the Pasuk. The answer is, the Pasuk is telling us a lesson, giving us the guidelines, the rules, in terms of what type can be brought at a Bama. Pshita, obviously, they brought the Pesach. Eloha, Kamash, the point of the Pasuk is to teach us, the Chayvus came Pesach. Who the Korban? Even a tzibur can only bring chayvos, which are similar to the Pesach. Those types are acceptable at a bama. Time-related karbanos. Holav kein Pesach, loy korei, but otherwise, if it's a karban chayva, which is not time-sensitive, like the Pesach is, that cannot be brought at a bama gedoyla. V'idach. Now the other opinions who disagreed, a tzibur can bring any chayva. So what's the point of this pasuk here, which describes the karban Pesach at Gilgal? Come and teach us something else entirely different. There's an interesting shaila. The question, can a person receive the paraduma waters if he's tamei? Does it work if he's also an arel, if he has not experienced the bris milah, for whatever reason? Can you sprinkle the paraduma waters on an arel and still be effective in removing the tumah that he has? And that's what we learn from this story. Because Klal Yisrael did not do bris milah throughout the midbar, because there was no ruach tzafoinis, a northerly wind, which would help them heal. So, due to the danger involved, they refrained from circumcising throughout the entire stay in the midbar. And they only did so once they entered Eretz Yisrael. But it was already time for the Korban Pesach, a couple of days later. And they were all tamei, because they were involved in burying their dead throughout the midbar, so they were Tamei and Arel at the same time. They had to undergo a quick Paraduma treatment to enable them to bring Korban Pesach coming up in a couple of days. Problem is, they were in a state of Arel at the time. Right? And the Paraduma waters have to be sprinkled on the third day and the seventh day. It's a long procedure. There wasn't enough time to cover it all, to do Mila and then have 7 days till Pesach, because there was only four days left. So, apparently, they received the water while they were still tummy, Arel, right? Which will give them enough time to do the double sprinkling on the third and the seventh day in preparation for the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan. Rashi brings the Gemara that the Gemara Nivamas talks about the fact that They arrived on the 10th day of Nisan, barely 4 days left till Pesach. They couldn't do Mila on that day because of the travel. It was only the next day. And they had to receive the first dose of Paraduma waters on the 10th day, which would enable them to get the second dose 4 days later, just in time for the Korban Pesach. So, yeah, can that be done? The answer is yes. And that we learn from this pasuk. We learn from this pasuk that even an Orel can be a Mekabel, can be the recipient of the Azor of the Paraduma water, which will be effective in removing his tumah. V'idach, so the other opinions use this pasuk to teach us, Miboyle, it's needed, look at Rabbi Yechanan. Dam Rabbi Yechanan, Mishom, the name of Rabbi Beno, Orel Mekabel Azor. Even an Orel could be the recipient of Azor. Continues the Gemara. There's another abraisa which relates to Rav Shimon's opinion in terms of limiting even the public from bringing all karbanis. In Evama Gedoyla, Tani Tanot, there was a chacham who presented a braisa, Kamed Rav Adam Rav, which says like this: Ein bein bama gedoyla. Is there any difference between a central bama and a private bama? Ein bein bama gedoyla lebama katan. There isn't much difference regarding donated karbanos that can be offered even in a private bama. Ella Pesach. Pesach is a chayva, limited to a public bama. V'chayva is hakabur lehen zman. So one distinction is Pesach. Public bama, yes. Private bama, no. And also, in reference to karbanos that in some variation, in some form, can come to a bama katana, like a donated oila, for instance, right? In the oila family, you have two types: obligatory ones, you know, the daily korban tamid, that's unique to a bama gedola, and a donated oila, same family, there's different brands, so to speak, different type, that can be brought even a private bama. So in terms of, let's say, the oila family, which one goes where? The nedava can come anywhere, but the chayvos, hakavul and zman, which are time related, like the korban tamid, which is an oila, a daily oila in the base of Midrash, that is limited to the bama gedola. Amar lei. Rav Adam bar Ava responded to targi masnisa oilas chayva, the oilas nedava. Clearly, this price holds that the only obligatory korban that will come into a bama gedola is the Pesach, first of all, and also an Oilas Chayva, in contrast to the Oilas Nedava, which can come anywhere. Right? So clearly the Braisa is setting up two different sort of categories of Karbanis. One, the Pesach, which is strictly, exclusively connected to the Bama Gedola. You can't bring in a Bama Ketana. And the second point is, Chayvos HaKavol and Zman relates to a different category, different family, which has two variations within it. One, the donated variation comes anywhere, even a bama ketana, and the chayva variation only in the bama gedola. But otherwise, let's say a chatas, that apparently the braisa doesn't allow you to bring it even a bama gedola, even if it's time related, even if it's time sensitive, from the fact that the braisa omitted reference to that type, that class, that family of karbanis. The chatas, yachid. The chatas. Some take out the next four words. The chatas, because otherwise, if the braisa would allow even a time-related chatas chayva to come to a bama gedola, chatas, nedava, mi'ika. Do we then have a donated chatas? Right? So the Brice is clearly referencing only a class, a family, a group of karbonis, a type of carbon which has two variations to it, chayva and adava. And in contrast to the adava that can be offered anywhere, the chayva is limited to the public bama. That's limited to the eil family. You don't have those two variations in a chatas. There's no donated chatas. So apparently this braisa only allows the following karbanis in the Bama Gedoyla: a Pesach or an Oilas Choyva that's connected to time. So as the Gemara, V'lukma b'minchas Choyva, Deike Chavitin. Well, why only an Oilah? You know what, even in the Mincha family, you have two types. You have a donated Mincha, which can come anywhere, and you have a Minchas Chavitin, the daily Mincha, the obligatory, time-related one that will be limited to a Bama Gedoyla. Why can't that also be covered by this price? Because he held that you never bring a Mincha by Bama, so that's not really up for discussion. Okay, so they arrived at Shiloh, which was the next phase, where they had a more formal Mishkan, and the Bamais now became, you know, offline, prohibited. And the Mishnah describes the Mishkan Shiloh as being something unique. Unique structure. The walls were solid, stone walls, but the top, the roof, was not made of solid material. It was actually Urias materials, which they had from the Mishkan. But not immediately, how do we know that in fact the Mishkan Shiloh was constructed in this manner? We have a seeming contradiction in the way the Pesukim describe Mishkan Shiloh. Here it says Vatvehu Beis Hashem Shiloh. This was Rachel who brought Shmuel to Beis Hashem. Sorry, Chama brought Shmuel to Beis Hashem, and it's called a Beis Hashem, like a solid structure. Because of Echad Omer, elsewhere it seems like it's just a tent made of material. Vayitish Mishkan Shiloh. So we're talking about Mishkan Shiloh, and it's called an oil, like a tent made of material. Okay, so how do you work this out? The walls on the ceiling were made of different materials. It didn't have a solid roof. Stones on the walls and curtains on top. That was considered first phase, temporary, you know, like a resting place, as opposed to ultimate nachla, which was the Beis HaMikdash, a solid structure throughout in Yerushalayim. Okay, now during Mishkan Shiloh, they would bring, you know, all the karbanos, and the Mishnah says, Kachik Adashim, that Kachik Adashim, which typically are eaten in the Mishkan here, you can eat it even in the perimeter, even on the outside, as long as you still have eye contact, as long as you're still within the field of vision of the Mishkan, which is an interesting concept. You can connect by way of vision. So you're far, far away, but if you see it, you relate to it, and you connect it, and you can eat kachar. Minan emili, this is an interesting halach, which requires a proper source. Where's the source for this? Amar Be'isha, the Makor, the Pasuk says, Yisham el chopin tavlan yusech b'chol makam ha'shet tira. Be careful. When you get to that place, the bamas are off. You better be careful from, watch yourself. Don't do oilis. Don't be makar, be oilis, wherever you decide. And the Pasuk calls it ha'shet tira. Seeing, visualizing, which indicates that he's at a distance but can see the Mishkan, that's not sufficient justification to bring the carbon there. Oh, to bring the carbon is not allowed at a distance, but to eat the carbon apparently is okay. You can't offer the carbon at a distance, but you can eat the carbon as long as you can still see the Mishkan. Well, says the Gemara, perhaps we learn the pasuk differently. Ema, we can learn like this. You can't burn the carbon. You can't be makrevit at a distance. Perhaps you can do shchita at a distance. But who says you're allowed to eat too? No, shchita and be makrev go hand in hand. So there's no distinction between the two. Apparently, it's only to allow eating at a distance. Sham tala v'sham tasa. There you burn it. There you do all the processes of a carbon. It's all in the same place. So the prohibition relates to the same makayim. You can't split them. Apparently, the split relates to eating at a distance, which is allowed. Amar b'yana makra. Sorry. Rav Dimya marchasa amar. Here comes another source that eye contact allows consumption. Amar makra, the pasuk says, V'loi tanas shiloi. This is an area in Eretz Yisrael, which connected to shiloi, tanas shiloi. Now, Tanas means something sad, like an oinein. What's the point of the pasuk? But describing an area from which you could see Mishkan Shiloh. And after Shiloh was destroyed, a person who would be standing in that place, which was at a distance, which was within the, you know, field of vision, he distresses about the destruction of Mishkan Shiloh. and the fact that he can no longer eat kachem at that location at a distance from Mishkan Shilui. Apparently that was allowed. Makim, it's a location, Shekola Roya Isai. Whoever sees that location, Saneach Alav, distresses about it. Alachilas kachem Shaloi. Regarding the consumption of kachem, which was allowed in this location in the past. So apparently you can eat even at a distance, as long as you can see it. Source number three, Revo Amar, Amakrov, Eva Pasek, Parsa Yechid, describing Yosef Atzadik, who was careful and guarded his eyes. And the Pasek gives him a bracha, Ben Poyras, Yosef, Poyras is Lashon, Pru, Revu, multiplying, expansion. Ben Poyras, Ali Oyin. And we learn, the eye, Ali Oyin, eye in the eye of Yosef, who was watchful and careful, who maintained his pristineness. Shalei Rata Lozen, he didn't want to satiate, but Leonis, and to have pleasure, something which is unbecoming of him, something which was unfit for him. So what's the merit, what's the schar in return Hashem gave him? Tiske v'toichal kumulay ne'o. So he's zoiche that the Mishkan, which was situated in his territory, will expand and spread itself out as long as the eye can see, right? So it's the schar for proper behavior with his eyes. So in return, as long as you can see, as far as the eye can see, you can still see Mishkan Shili, you can eat karbanas there. So the territory sort of expanded itself as far as the eye can see. Okay, so we learned that he could eat kachim from a distance. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina Amar, here comes source number four. Ritzayin Sheikh, he said, this is in Zayis HaBracha. Moshe Rabbeinu is giving the bracha to Shevet Yosef, right? Descendants of Yosef HaTzadik. Ritzayin Sheikh Nisne. And likewise, we learn that it's in the schus of their grandfather, Yosef, who followed and adhered to Ritzayin, to the will of Hashem, in terms of maintaining his purity. I in the eye, Shle Ritzayin Lehonis, Midavar Shenshle, who refused to partake in something which wasn't his. Next comes Sheikhni, he was Zeichet at a Shechina, Sne, which expanded and spread throughout all the neighboring territories. So its influence, its effect was felt all throughout the area. Tiske v'toicha ben Asnun was Zeichet, that the consumption of the karbanas related to that Mishkan Shile was eaten at a distance, ben Asnun, amongst the territories of the neighboring tribes who disliked the Yosef and they sold him. So apparently, the effect, the influence of the Mishkan Shilo was felt all around the area, even at a distance. Tana, we learn in the Brisa, so how does this work? How do you define? What are the guidelines of B'chol HaRoya, as far as you can see? Roya Sha'amra, when we speak about Roya, Roya Kulay, you have to see the Mishkan. As opposed to having an obstruction between yourself and the Mishkan. So if there's something blocking, that's not considered eye contact. Amalei, Rabbi Shimon ben Eliyakim l'Blazer. Azblach, let me show you an example of a location which conformed to this criteria. Kigoyin beiknishta de moin, it was at Beis HaKnesses, the place moin, which was in direct view of the Mishkan Shiloi. Amar Papa, Roya Shamar, when we speak about Roya, Loi Roya Kula, even if he doesn't see the entire structure, El Roya Mektas, even part of it is enough. Boy Rabbi Papa, Oymed v'Roya, suppose he can see it while he's standing up, but he wants to sit down to have his meal. But once he's Yoshev, Beni Roy, now he can't see it anymore. Do we need actual contact on account of the person? Or perhaps the position, the location is enough? My, what's the status here? Now let's assume it's okay, because the location is directly connected, even though he himself is in a sitting position. That's irrelevant. But Rabbi Yirmiyah, so based on this comes another question from Rabbi Yirmiyah. What about if the topography drops? If it were straight, he can see it, but since it drops and dips, that's what's obstructing. Suppose when he's standing on top of the ravine, he can see. But once he gets down below, he can no longer see. My, what's the halacha here? Do we say, well, imagine like he's on top? Or do we say, no, out of luck, take it. We leave it unresolved. Kiyasa Rav Dimi Amar, he quotes Rebbe, you meant to know throughout history, the Shechina formerly rested three different places. Three different locations. Bishiloi, Vinoy Vigivain, Ubeis Halamim, three different places. Ubakulan Lai Shar Sal Bakhalak Binyamin. You should know. throughout all three times. It was always in the chelek, the territory of Binyamin. He was zeicher. Some say because he was the only one born in Eretz Yisrael. Some say he wasn't involved in the mechiras Yosef. Shenemar, we find in the pasuk chayivol of kol yoyim. This is regarding Binyamin. Kol chafifa is all of these resting places. Lo yo b'chalak shem Binyamin always was in chelek Binyamin. Kos labaye. When Abaye went to Rav Yosef, Amar committed Rav Yosef. He presented this interesting lesson to Rav Yosef. Amar, and Rav Yosef responded. A little bit displeased with this statement. He says, Abaye's father's name was Kailil. He says, Chad bro havli l'Kailil. You know, Kailil had only one son, Abaye. V'lay mitkin, and he's not even doing so well. Meaning, what he said was incorrect. Why? Because Mishkan Shiloh was clearly in the chelik of Yosef. V'ksiv ha'itish Mishkan Shiloh, v'ksiv v'yimas bo'el Yosef, v'shedrayim le'bochar. So Mishkan Shiloh is synonymous with Yosef's territory, not Binyamin. Omar of Adam, Michael Kashile, what's the big deal? Perhaps it straddled the border between Yosef and Binyamin's descendants, which was Ephraim. It was part here and part here. Dilma Shchina b'chelik Binyamin. The main focal point of the Shchina was in chelik Binyamin. That's where the Mishkan was. But Sanhedrin Gedol, but the grand Sanhedrin, the grand court, b'chelik Yosef was right nearby in Yosef's territory, and they are also considered the makam of Shchina. The Shchina is, you know, present when the Dayanim discuss Torah, right? So perhaps it was part and part, just like we find in Beis Hamidash, right? Like you find ultimately in the Beis HaMikdash that it was part and part. The Shechina b'chelik Yosef Binyamin, the main part of the Shechina, the Kedesh HaKadosh, and Hechel was on Chelik Binyamin, but the Sanhedrin Gedolah, the Grand Sanhedrin, was over b'chelik Yosef. The Shechina b'chelik Yosef Binyamin, Sanhedrin b'chelik Yehuda. Right? So we find that it's sometimes shared. So perhaps here as well. That you know, Mishkan Shila was in Binyamin, but the Sanhedrin nearby was in Chelik Yosef, Amalei. So he said, no, you can't compare the two stories, because just placement-wise, we know that in terms of the map, Yehuda was near Binyamin, but Ephraim was not near Yosef. Ephraim was not near Yosef. Sorry. Binyamin was near Yehuda, but Binyamin was not near Yosef. So again, just to clarify, he had said that all Hashra'as Hashchina, including Shilai, was in Chelek Binyamin. Abaye says, what do you mean? The Pasuk speaks about Shilai being in Chelek Yosef. The Gemara suggests perhaps it was part and part, part Yosef and part Binyamin, just like we find a similar division over in the Beis HaMikdash. It was part in Binyamin and part in Yehuda. Amar Leis, he says, how could you compare? Hachi Yashta, Hasam, Mikavar, Nachlis, Kabi Adadi, Adir, in the Beis HaMikdash, yeah, if you look at the map, you have Yehuda right near Binyamin, so it can work. So the Beis HaMikdash sort of straddled both territories. Hachami Mikavar, and here, they were not next to each other at all, Yosef and Binyamin. Well, Hachinami Mikavar, you can say here too, although in general they were at a distance, but perhaps there was a little swath of territory, a little strip, which left Chelik of Yosef and protruded into Chelik, near Chelik Binyamin, and that's where the Mishkan was. So you covered both territories. Kedamar b'chamar b'chaninah, we find a similar statement regarding the Beis HaMikdash. Rutsua hoisa Yosef b'chelik of Yehuda was a little strip, leaving Yehuda's territory even Echneses and would protrude into the Chelik of Shel Binyamin. Ubayim Mizbeach Banim, which the Mizbeach was built. Binyamin HaTzadik with Stira Lelabayla. We had this discussion in the past, right? Binyamin HaTzadik in the past, when he saw this in the future through Ruach HaKodesh, this is going to happen, that part of the Mizbech will have to be built on the part of Yehuda. He was unhappy about it. He wanted the whole thing in his territory. Hachinami, likewise, can be said over here regarding Mishkan Shiloh. It shared both territories. Ritzoy, so Yosef is Mechalka Shel Yosef. It was a little strip leaving Yosef's area. Lichalke headed for Chalke Shel Binyamin. And that's where the Mishkan was. Tana Shiloh. That also explains the pasuk mentioned earlier. There was the stress regarding Shiloh, meaning that Binyamin fourth saw this in Ruach HaKodesh, and he didn't want that any part of the Shechina will be shared with a different Shevet, and that's why it's Tana Shiloh. Okay, so in any case, you can work it out. Ketanai, but in fact, it's Machlekes Tanaim. This question of where Mishkan Shiloh was situated, was it strictly on Binyamin or on Shevet Yosef? Ketanai. So the pasuk regarding Binyamin says Chayfif Olav, right? Kol Ayoyim, Avin Seif Shachin. So each phrase in the pasuk relates to a different stage. Chayfif Olav, that's going on the first Beis Hamikdash. Zemikdash Rishon, which was situated on Binyamin's territory. The words Kol Ayoyim, that's going on the second Beis Hamikdash. Zemikdash Sheni. So clearly, this system only began from the Beis Hamikdash, but earlier in the Mishkan Shiloh, it wasn't necessarily on Binyamin's territory. It was on Yosef's. Furthermore, the pasuk says, "Uvink Seif of Shachin, Eli Moshe Mashiach." In days to come, the third Beis Hamikdash will be also on Shevet Binyamin's territory. So, according to this opinion, Mishkan Shiloh was not there. Rabbi Eimer, no, he says even Mishkan Shiloh was on his territory, because this pasuk covers all bases. Chayiv Olav refers to all the formal resting places in this world, El Mazeh. The words Kol Ayoyim, El Mazeh Mashiach, even then, he'll be Zechat Hashuas Hashchina, Ben Sefer Shachin, it's going on the world to come, Zeh El Mabo, ultimately, he'll be the host of the Shechina on the highest level. Okay, now we speak about Mishkan Shiloh. How long did Mishkan Shiloh stand for? So in the upcoming Gemara, we're going to work through all the numbers, basically from Yetzias Mitzrayim, through the Midbar, where the first Mishkan was built, into Eretz Yisrael, where for 14 years they had the Bama, the central Bama, in Gilgal, over to Mishkan Shiloh for 369 years, over to Noiv V'Givon for a total of 57 years, then finally over to the Beis HaMikdash, which Shlomo HaMelech built exactly at 850 years after they left Mitzrayim. That's going to help us out, help us decipher, figure out the sequence of events and how many years each resting place, each Shechina, each, you know, Mishkan, each Bama stood for. Okay, so in general, that's the sequence. Yetzias Mitzrayim, 40 years in the Midbar, 7 years where they conquered the land, 7 years they divided the land, which was the period of the Bama in Gilgal, over to Mishkan Shiloh for 369, Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed, over to Noiv and then to Givon for a total of 57 years. At that point, the Bamis were allowed. Then over to Beis HaMikdash for Mikdash Rishon. Tanan Rabbani, Mei Oil Mei Yeshu Midbar. How long did the first Mishkan stand in the Midbar? Arbaim Shana Chasar Achas. 40 minus a year, 39, because it was built on the second year after they left Mitzrayim and lasted until the end of the 40 years. So it's 39 years. Yimei Oil Mei Yeshu Gilgal. What about the Oil Mei of Gilgal? That's 14 years in total. Abbas Rishana. Right? Throughout the 7 years, Sheva Shekavshu, when they conquered and they took over the land, Vizayin Shechoku, and plus 7 years that they divided the land as well. Total of 14. Now, after Shiloh, they went to Nevi Givayin, which stood for 57. So, how much do we have left? Nishtairi Lishiloh. How much is left? Sorry, let me correct that number. The Beis HaMikdash was built 480 years after leaving Mitzrayim. Okay, 480 years after leaving Mitzrayim. The Churban was, we'll get to the Churban later. But the building was 480 after it left Mitzrayim. So let's take the number 480 and deduct 40 years of the Midbar. 14 years of Gilgal, 7 years Kavshu, 7 years Chalku. We know that Noiv V'Givon, which was actually after Shiloh, was 57 in total. So if you take that all off the number of 480, you're left with 369, which was exactly how long Shiloh was standing for. Okay, so there's no clear pasuk about it, but based on the, you know, our deductions, the end result is 369, which was for Mishkan Shiloh. Okay, now let's go review these numbers. This is sort of like a prelude to the coming Gemara. How do we know that the Oil Moed Midbar stood for 39 years and not, you know, 40? The Ramah, because we learned in a price, it was only built year 2 after leaving Mitzrayim. Shana Rishayna Asa Meshe Samishkan. The first year Meshe built it, and it was only put up on the second year, right? Shniyah Hukam HaMishkan. Vishilach Meshe Meraglim. And then he sent out the Meraglim on that second year. Okay, so that's a pretty bona fide fact. So the Mishkan lasted from year 2 till year 40, a total of 39. Sheba Gilgal, the arrangement in Gilgal was a 14-year arrangement. Arba'es Rishon. Why? Sheva Shekavshu, Sheva Shechalku. Throughout the seven of conquering, seven of dividing. Menon, how do we know that in fact it was a 14-year experience, seven and seven? The Gomer Kalev, because Kalev tells us like this. He's in Eretz Yisrael, and he's asking for the Chevron city to be given, you know, to be granted the Chevron as his territory. And he gets up and he makes an announcement. You meant to know, Ben Arboim Shana, Onoichi, I was exactly 40 years old, B'Shaleich Moshe, Eved Hashem Moshe, when Moshe, Hashem's servant, appointed me as a spy, sent me off, B'Shaleich Moshe, Eved Hashem Moshe, Mikodesh Barnea, from that place, L'Ragolas Ha'oretz, to spy the land, V'Oshe Moshe, Dovah Hashem L'Vavi, and I was a man of integrity, I responded to him the way I was supposed to, giving him an accurate depiction of the land. Okay, so I was 40 years at that point. And today, I am 85 years old. Uksiv, and then it says, Va'ata, and today, now, I am 85. Okay, so let's picture it. He was sent out at 40, and now he's 85. He was sent out on year 2 of the 40 desert years, leaving us with 38 left until they entered the land. So if he was 40 at that point, he entered at 78. And now he's saying that he's 85. Apparently, 7 years passed during which they were conquering the land. Now they were finished conquering, ready to divide, and he was asking for his portion, right? So when he crossed the Jordan into Eretz Yisrael, Bar Kamavi, how old was he? Bar Shivan Vitami, 78. Now he's saying, I'm 85. Apparently, it took 7 years to conquer. Ben Chamesh, Yishmoinim Shana, Harei. This confirms the number of Sheva Shekavshu, seven for conquering. Okay, that's behind us. What about seven for dividing? How do you know it took that long? Sheva Shekavshu, Benol, Iboy, Seimba. One option would be, it's a Svara. But the Sheva Kavshu, if it took seven to conquer, apparently that's a significant number. Hashem wanted that to be a time frame for accomplishing that accomplishment. And likewise, for the next accomplishment to divide, correspondingly, you need 7 years. Sheva Namichok. Another way to prove that it was, in fact, a 7 plus 7 year experience. This is a bit more complicated. We're going to have to work backwards. Because otherwise, you're not going to work out the pasuk of Bar Basri Shana Achar Asher Huksa'ir. Okay. So Rashi explains it in great detail as follows. This is Yechesel. Prophesizing, and he's saying, look, it's now Yom Kippur of the Yovel year, and it actually is year 14 after Huksa'ir that the city of Esmin was destroyed. Now, we also know that Churban Beis Hamikdash took place 850 years after they entered Eretz Yisrael. Now, every 50 years is a Yovel cycle, right? So the question is, if he's holding at year 14 after the Churban, why is it Yovel? You would think Churban happened on Yovel. Because if we take 850, again, that's the number of years that transpired, that passed, from entry of Eretz Yisrael until Churban Beis Hamikdash, 850 divided by 50, each Yovel cycle is a 50-year chunk, get you 17 cycles of Yovel. So Churban Beis Hamikdash would occur exactly on a Yovel, the end of the 50-year cycle. Not 14 years after the Churban is Yovel. Why is he speaking about Yovel taking place 14 years later? Apparently, because they only started counting 14 years into Eretz Yisrael. They didn't start counting the first year, because they were busy. The first 14 years didn't qualify. They were still being conquered, divided. You can only start the full count when they're settled. Not only began 14 years after entry. So once we get to year 850, which was the Churban, you're missing 14 years to get to the completion of that Yovel cycle. That only happened 14 years later. And that's why Yechezkel is referring to the current year, which is 14 years after Churban, as the Yovel year. So clearly, the process of conquering and dividing took 14 years. Next point. So that stage was 57 years. Chamishim Mishav. Vinol, how do we know? That took 57 years. Tichsiv. So this was during Eli HaKohen's priesthood. He was the Kohen Gadol in Mishkan Shiloh, and the Plishtim attacked, and they took the Ura and the Holy Ark as captive. And when he got word about it, he fainted, and he collapsed, and he died. V'tana, we learned on the Brayso, Kshemes Eli HaKohen, Eli HaKohen died, Chorva Shiloh. It coincided with the destruction of Mishkan Shiloh. Uvolu Noiv, the next stage was Noiv. Kshemes Shmuel HaRamasi, when Shmuel HaRamasi passed away, Chorva Noiv, Noiv was destroyed, the Bola Gibeon, they took him to Gibeon now, Uksiv. Now, we also know that the Aroin was actually returned when the Goyim saw that it wasn't giving them any success, they were experiencing tragedy after tragedy. They sent it back with those cows, right? Remember those miraculous cows who sung on the way? And they actually brought the Aron to a place called Kiryas Yearon. Okay? So this happened soon after they robbed the Aron. They sent it back, 7 months later, placed it in Kiryas Yearon. Uksiv the Pasuk says, Vahi, Miyayim Shevas Aron, the Kiryas Yearon. So it was a 20-year period from when the Aron landed in Kiryas Yearim until David HaMelech was accepted as the official king on the entire nation. So now let's work through these 20 years. Hani Esrim Shana. Let's break down the 20 years into bite-sized pieces. What occurred during these 20 years? Esr Shana, the first 10 years, Shemalach Shmuel Batzma, Shmuel led on his own. He was the one leader. Vishana Shemalach Shmuel Vishal, and then he appointed Shaul as a king, and they sort of shared leadership during that next year. That's 11 years. Vishtam Shemalach Shaul, then Shaul, due to the tragic episode with Amalek, Shmuel turned away from him, and Shaul was on his own for 2 years. The Shabbat of David, and then David was appointed king, but initially he was only a localized kingdom. It was only in Hebron, amongst his people, amongst Yehuda. So we have, we covered the 20 years, right? From Kiryas Yearim until now, and then, right, the Chsiv, and then afterwards, he was finally accepted as the, universally as the king among over the entire nation. Uksiv, the Chsiv, and it says, Uksiv, Vayom Hashem Melech David al Yisrael, Mem Shana. That ultimately David was a king for 40 years in total. Bechevron Melech Shavashan, the initial 7 years in Chevron was the first 7 years. And then 33 more years that he was a king in Mitzrayim, in Yerushalayim, over the entire nation. And then Shlomo Melech Hasan took over. Ubishlomo Uksiv. So at this point, we still don't have a Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash was only built the fourth year into Shlomo's reign. 4 years into his reign, he built a Beis HaMikdash. So how many years do we have for Noiv HaGibeon? How many years from when Shiloh was destroyed, from when Eli HaKohen was died, and the Aron was taken and brought back to Kiryas Yearim? How much time passed from then till the Beis HaMikdash was built, which coincided with Noiv HaGibeon, right? That's when the Obama was in Noiv HaGibeon. 57 years, right? Because you have the 20 years that we spoke about from Kiryas Yearim until David arrived in Yerushalayim. You have 33 more years in Yerushalayim, so that's 53, and 4 years into Shlomo Melech's Malchus when he started building the Beis HaMikdash. So that's 57 years. So this gives us another clue to how long Shiloh was. Because if we take the 480 years from when they left Mitzrayim until the Beis HaMikdash was built, and you deduct 40 years of the desert, 14 years of Gilgal, 57 for Noiv HaGibeon, you're left with how much? Nishtayru l'Shiloh, for Shiloh you have 369 remaining. Shalai Shmeyoiz, v'shibim chasur achas. Okay, so that confirms everything we spoke about. Okay, so the interesting sequence of events was sort of back and forth. First, the Mishkan was in the Midbar, no Bamais allowed. Then over to Gilgal, yes Bamais. Then over to Shiloh, no Bamais. Then over to Noiv HaGibeon, again, back to Bamais, and finally to the Beis HaMikdash, which was the what we call Nachla, the final resting place, and that was designated as the one and only place that you can bring Karbanes to Hashem. All the best to you and Hatzlocha.